Annuncia.
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 Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I'm happy to announce that Ghostlight Records has just released the cast recording for The Gardens of Annuncia, which was originally developed for the Old Globe Theater in San Diego, which I will be there down there in about a week to see another brand new musical. But the show actually recently played at the Mitzi Newhouse Theater at Lincoln Center last October through December, where it got really great reviews. But like I said, the new cast recording is out, and we have the gentleman who wrote the book, Music and Lyrics, Michael John Lacuzas, with us. Hi.
Hi, Donald.
I'm glad you're here.
Pleasure to be here.
We're going to talk about the show. We're going to talk about the score. And a lot of it we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about the woman who is instrumental on why this musical exists. And that is Graciela Danielle, who was the director and choreographer, co-choreographer of the show. She co-choreographed it with Alex Sanchez. But first off, congratulations on
a
beautiful and complex score. And also the cast recording, I got to tell people, and my listeners always get sick and tired of me saying this, and that is that I always tell them that when a new cast recording comes out or any recording comes out, you have to sit down, dedicate the time to sit down and listen to it from beginning to end in one sitting. And this is the kind of recording you want to do that with, because the recording takes you on a journey. It's telling you a story. And you have done that with this, because it really does tell you the story.
Thank you, Donald.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, a good cast recording should be able to tell you the story without you having to see the show. And this cast recording does that. So congratulations on that.
Thank you very much.
So let's first off talk about your history with Graciela. I know you call her Grazi. Is that what you normally call her?
Grazi, yeah. All of us call her Grazi. I like to call her Graciela. It's just so wonderful, that name.
Yeah,
such a beautiful name.
Yeah, because I know your first time working with her was on Hello Again back in 1994.
That's right.
Correct. And that also played at the New House. So it's kind of full circle. You're working with her, worked with her again at the New House for this show.
Correct.
So credit me around full circle, because this show was inspired by her. So talk about your history with her, because you've done quite a few shows with Graciela.
Yeah, indeed. We did meet doing Hello Again at the Lincoln Center Theater at the Mitzi Newhouse, introduced to each other by musical producer there, Ira Weitzman. And we've known each other since then, and we've worked on many shows since then. Marie Christine, Little Fish, Bernarda Alba, Chronicle of a Death Foretold, many, many shows. And you become very close and very close friends with each other. And I remember I was teaching up at Columbia University one year and was doing a master class up there on writing. And I was inviting people up that had long lives in the theater, and to demonstrate to students of that once you commit to doing this, a life in the theater, it's a lifelong commitment. And I like bringing up people who had long lives, longevity in the theater. So Grazi came up and she was talking to the students. Now, I thought I knew every story that Grazi had ever told me about her growing up in Argentina, and in the 1940s and 1950s, brought up by her three remarkable women, her mommy, her grandmama, and her tia. And without a father, and growing up in a government of the Juan Perón and Eva Perón, we all know Eva Perón from Evita, obviously, and how she grew up and became a ballerina in the course of things, and inspired and encouraged by her family. And I knew a lot of these stories, and I remember taking her up to that class at Columbia, and she was talking to the students about her life, and she told one story I had not heard. And we went out afterwards for our martinis, three olives on the side, very, very dry, straight up. And I said to her, I didn't hear that story that you told the kids today. And I'm going to go home and write a musical about you. There's nothing else to be done about it. No, there's nothing else. It's just one more fascinating story after the other. And she said, no, you're not. And I said, well, why not? She said, I've lived my life. I don't want to see it again. which is, you know, I understand. All the same, I went home and wrote the opening number. I didn't care. And then after I wrote a few more numbers, I went to her house and I played her the songs that I had written that based on a lot of the stories that she had told me. She said, okay, if you want to do it, do it. But don't make it about me. Make it about these three remarkable women. And so I did. And it's a certain homage to not only to these particular women who were so instrumental in raising this very gifted, very talented artist named Graziella Danielle, but it's also a tribute to all of the people in our lives who we need to say thank you to. Mm-hmm. Those teachers, our mothers, our fathers, our aunties, our grandparents, whomever, that gave us the willpower and the strength to survive in a business that's hard to survive in, if not just show business, but the world in and of itself. And so it became, and then that's the global theme of the piece. So it was a joy to write. I tell you, it was so much fun. I don't know if it was a joy for Graziella to have to direct her life, but we had a good time doing it. Of course, we were blessed with a wonderful, wonderful cast as well.
Close your eyes. Now listen. To what? Listen to the music, tell me what you're seeing.
Nothing.
Listen to the notes and let them swirl and dance in your mind. The pictures you find are little seeds you can sow. Listen to the music and watch your garden grow.
I'm not seeing any garden.
Listen to the music, make believe you're flying. Floating over mountains, then you stop to rest on a cloud. Of course you're allowed whatever pictures you see. Listen to the music, and please don't bother me. Maybe you see horses galloping with thunder. See dragons breathing flames of wonder. Follow the melody like the path that you take through the park. And when it grows dark, you can follow it home. Follow the melody, don't be frightened to wander and roam. Let it lead you. Colors form into shapes like plum purple grapes. They'll make for very sweet wine. Listen to the music. Try to see the colors. Turn them into pictures. Make the pictures stories. Then you'll tell your stories. And I will tell.
And the water is very blue.
And orangey pink.
Oh, and polka dotted.
Yes.
And over there is a very old tree. And its branches are filled with apples and cherries.
And cake.
Oh, vanilla cake.
Delicious.
Oh, there's a parade of peacocks coming out of the woods. Or maybe they're ostriches. No, they're peacocks with giant feathers, and they're shaking their culitos.
Shaking their culitos?
Like this. Look, over there.
Where?
There, beneath the old tree. There's a man, and he's very tired and thirsty and hungry because he's been on a journey.
Fetch him a glass of polka dotted water.
Oh. He's very handsome.
That's good. Where is he traveling to?
To his home. He's been away for a very long time. And he misses his family a lot, and he wants to be with them again. But I don't know.
Nina.
My story turns sad.
Sometimes that happens. That's okay. Listen to the music, listen to your feelings. Don't be scared to have them, good or bad. They're all part of you. Your stories are too, so make them stories you share. Listen to your feelings.
Don't be scared to have them.
Turn them into pictures.
Make them into stories.
Set them into motion. Make believe you're flying. Listen to the music and dream beyond a day.
Talk to me in more, a little bit more detail about the collaboration on this, because it is a little tricky because you are working. She's the subject. It is sort of a biographical musical, but also not a biographical musical because she doesn't it to be really biographical. The lead character is not named Graziella. It's a different. It's got a different name. It is still about her growing up with her grandmother and her mother and her aunt. So it does have that, and it is still set in Juan Perón's Argentina. It's still basically her life, but it's a different character. And she is still directing and choreographing the show that is based on her life. And you're writing based on her experiences. So what was the collaboration like? Because you're trying to honor her family, but also still trying to create a dramatic piece of theater, correct?
Yes, that's correct. But you understand that it is not a bio musical by any stretch of imaginations. It's my take on and inspired by these stories to write a story in and of itself that celebrates these three women. So if you're going to come to listen to the piece and get biographical, you know, facts of her career, you won't find them in the piece, because we both and I had decided, and we did have our little things about it. I thought, well, maybe doesn't the audience need to know that you worked with Michael Bennett and Bob Fosse and all these remarkable people, and that you were in the original Follies? And she would always come back, no, that's not the important part of this. This is really something about what gave me the strength and and the inspiration to become a ballerina and then a choreographer and then a director. And she was correct about it. In fact, her husband, Jules Fisher, the great line designer, was one who pointed out to me is that he said, when you do put these very specific names into the show, it dates the show. Mm-hmm. Don't you want the piece to be something that's timeless in that sense? Right. And I went, oh yes, of course. And it's true. If we had put these specific names into the show, I think it would have weighted that piece down too much. It would not have taken it into the realm of, well, magical realism, if you will. It would have been too, there's a lot of bio musicals out there right now, which some of them work and some of them do not work at all. Mm-hmm. And it's always careful, because you always have to be careful when you're writing something about a historically true character, but also to have that theatrical element involved, which involves fantasy and imagination. I changed your name, though, because Graziella was born on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. And for my Catholics in the audience, the Immaculate Conception is more of a theological holiday. It isn't really about Mary, the mother of Jesus, but it's about Mary's mother. That in order to prove that Mary was a virgin, they had to go back another generation and prove that Anne, her mother, was also a virgin. It's just, it gets a little too little. So I always loved the Feast of the Annunciation, because that was, much more beautiful. I mean, the angel comes to Mary and says, okay, Mary, guess what? God chose you. You ready for this? And I always thought that was fascinating, that Mary was actually kind of given a choice. You can take this or not, Mary, and I always loved that. So that's how the name of Annuncia came up, as opposed to using Grazi's name or Immaculate Conception or something,
And one of the things that struck me also was the fact that when she kind of was finally agreeable to you sort of using her story as the basis for the show, her immediate reaction was, well, you need to focus on the mother, the grandmother, and the aunt, which, interestingly enough, and I don't know if this even struck you, but it struck me in the sense that her career, especially her career in New York on stage, was that she was always in the ensemble or a supporting player anyway. And in this, the character that's the most tied to her, which is Annuncia, is sort of secondary in the sense that even though she's the driving force, she's in the title of the show, but it really is about the other characters are really the ones who are at the forefront. It's really, she's sort of the background character.
About the gardens, not Annuncia.
Right. And sort of, that's sort of what her career was like on stage in New York anyway, is that she was always the supporting characters in the show and she wasn't the leads. And it's sort of the same way in this show as well. She's not really the lead in the show, even though she narrates and she's, you know, she's important to the show. It's really about the three women who nurtured her.
Very much fun. Exactly. And a deer.
Yes, we will get to the deer. Believe me, that's one of the bullet points in my notes. We'll get to the deer because I know that threw a lot of people. It didn't throw me. I mean, when I got to it, I was like, oh, I totally get this.
Yeah, but you're smart, Donald. There you are.
Well, I get the magical realism thing because I understand the tradition in, you know, South American and Latin American literature, but we will get to that. But talk about the approach that you took towards the three women, because it's, again, a little bit of a balancing act. You're dealing with three actual real women, but you're also working with, you know, three characters that you're trying to, that are very different from each other. I mean, mm-hmm. you've got three women who are playing an important role in nurturing this character, who's a young girl in the show, who is ultimately going to turn into what is ultimately going to be Graziella or the grown Annuncia. So you've got to make them different enough in the show, character-wise, and have different influences in terms of how they influence the girl.
That's good.
How did that work for you, especially while also trying to sort of still be true to the real character, the real life people?
Well, you know, as the piece developed and went along, and as you say, they were quite different from each other. Mm-hmm. You know, it began just in a global sense. Once I found the specificity of each of the characters, what they wanted, their flaws, their individual complexities. Once I had sort of began nailing down those, I began thinking in terms of a global sense of what they meant elementally, if you will. The mommy is the sunshine. She's the heat. She's the fire. She's the, you know, if you will, elementally speaking. Grandmama is the earth, the dirt. She speaks often of the garden and planting your tomatoes, or they become, don't plant them too close or they become resentful. And there's nothing you can do with a resentful tomato, grandmother said. And then Tia, who is the light in the water. And what is it that a young plant needs? It needs water and the cooling resource of water. Thus the ant, who teaches her the gift of imagining music and listening to music. Or grandmama, who is the earth, who teaches her to love the earth and to stay grounded. And then you have the fire of her mommy, the fire and the passion that this woman had, and which imbues you and keeps you strong in the face of adversity. So you had so once that global thing started kicking in, I began, you know, that fleshed it out a little bit more to make the differentiations between each of the women and each role that they played in her life, as you would nurturing a young plant, or if you will, a young flower.
And of course, you're helped immensely when you get on stage and you have Eden Espinosa as Mama, and you have Andrea Burns as the aunt, and you have the force of nature herself, Mary Testa, as Grandmama. You know, you are helped. And of course, they exude such incredibly different personalities, even just on a recording.
Right.
That helps you immensely, true, right?
Oh my God, it's a blessing, is what it is, Donald. To work with three and four. Well, you know, and also two. We must add the remarkable Kaylin West, who plays the young girl, young Annuncia, and the legend herself, Priscilla Lopez, as well. And two mix. It's not just our Eden and Mary and Andrea who brought that show to life for us on stage. It's also Priscilla and Kaylin, who did such a breathtakingly beautiful job translating that a very difficult role. So I was blessed with these five incredible women to work with, and who, you know, you learn more from the actors than you ever will from anything else. Once they get it under their belt and they began singing it back to you and getting into their bodies, you just listen to them and they will tell you what's right and what's wrong, what works and what doesn't work. Listening to your actress is vital to the process. And so I'm very, very lucky to have worked with these five incredibly brilliant actresses. And I've been very lucky through my whole life to have these people in my life to learn from and grow with.
The whole world waited for the maiden's yes. But what she'd answer was anyone's guess. The whole world waited and it held its breath for the moment when life would conquer death. Though she was chosen, Mary had a choice. She trembled hearing the angel's sweet voice. Though she was chosen, Mary still was free. She could do as God asked or say not me.
These days like those days, it's hard to be a virgin. Women always have to take care.
These days like those days, the slightest hint of scandal can ruin your life. So best beware.
So best beware.
So best beware.
If you should meet an angel talking sweet and kind, who offers paradise, keep this in mind.
There's no harm waiting to decide until choose comes from your own free will.
Well, and you've also, I mean, throughout your career, you have written so many complicated women characters in your shows. I mean, you've got Marie Christine, you've got Queenie in The Wild Party, you've got the women in Bernarda Alba, you've got Queen of the Mist with Annie Edson Taylor. You've got incredibly complicated women that you've written for. But in this case, it's a little bit different because you're dealing with what is ultimately almost a love letter to Graziella and her life, which I'm guessing requires a little bit more care and a little bit more, I don't know how to describe it, because you're not working from a piece of literature, you're working from the heart. There were no
restraints put on me to
right.
include what I wanted to include in the piece. There were some very dark stories that Graziella had told me, and some of them I thought were very were not the ones that I thought would be were not appropriate for this particular story. But I do include two very dark moments in her life where her mother was taken in by the police for purportedly passing on messages to the rebel forces. We don't know the answer to that because it was never found out. She was her beautiful mystery. You know, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's a very dark moment. I mean, you imagine having your mother taken away at a very young age, and particularly at that time in Argentina, that to be placed in a prison, if you were hauled off to jail, generally you would be killed. And she was fortunately released from custody. And so that was a very dark moment. And then, of course, the very, very dark story of how her father left her and her mother and abandoned that family. Very dark moments. And Grazi had no restraint about or asked me to not do it. There was none of that happening in it, which is a blessing, you know. So I was able to put in those dark things because I felt it was necessary, because I feel like also too, people share those dark things. We all have these dark moments in our lives, particularly in our childhood, that inform us and educate us, if you will, sometimes. And if we are nurtured through those dark moments and supported through those dark moments as a child, somehow that we overcome those dark moments and make them into something better, or hold on to the anchor, which can make you also a very good person too, you know. So and she allowed me to do that, so there wasn't anything like I was not put into any handcuffs,
right?
What I couldn't do,
right. And so talk about the setting of Argentina in the time period, and also the influence on the score, because I know that you incorporate some of the Argentinian music with tango, but it's your interpretation of the tango. It's not a straight tango. It's your interpretation, which is what a composer should do.
Thank you very much for realizing it. Something I always encourage my students too. The wonderful thing, for instance, that the maestro Bernstein he doesn't just do a cha-cha, he does Bernstein's cha-cha. Mm-hmm. You know, it's filtered through the writer, and so it doesn't become, you know, just the thing, you know, it becomes something that is actually its own thing, though filtered through and filtered by filtering it through the artist's sensibilities and tastes, etc. And so that's what I try to do with the tango. It's not tango, it's Michael John Lacusa's version of that.
The day is long and boring, the work is dull and trite. What helps to keep from snoring is thinking of tonight. Malagueña, the club on is on our street. Malagueña, you feel that me long heartbeat. Work's done and you're excited, just like a young girl feels when she is first invited to dancing grown-up heels. Malagueña, who knows what the night will bring. Malagueña, the night can bring anything. At first you walk through the door, the place is alive with the cigarette smoke and the pink and blue lights. 200 people or more, all your partners are there. Esteban and Luis and the blonde, what's his name? Then you step out on the floor and your partner takes hold. A cachengue is first and your feet start to move. You feel yourself start to soar into pink and blue lights, into music and smoke, into like the old life. Perfect dancer, good looking, confident, and proud. Sometimes he's quite the fine romancer. It's okay to be romanced, just enjoy it, it's allowed. It's okay for what it was. It's okay.
that you move on.
And you also, did quite a bit of research on the Perón era in Argentina, from what I read, right?
That's very much so.
Because the show is almost in some ways a weird counterpoint to Evita, because you're seeing kind of the other side of, you know, the other side of the life of people living under the regime.
Yeah, I mean, there's very little to celebrate about the Perón regime. And, you know, Evita too, I mean, it has a very cynical eye to it as well, not to take anything away from Evita at all. It's a very powerful score, as all of Andrew Lloyd Webber's scores are. They're quite wonderful. But it does, it is not a celebration of Evita. Although, right. You know, there's also there are several lines in the piece. They are on the album, obviously, because it's dialogue on. But it does say, you know, Ava did do things, you know, she did, you know, encourage women the right to vote, although the women had the right to vote for her husband.
Right.
You know, but she did do an awful lot for children and education. She did vie for that. And so there were good things too about Ava, but not so much about Juan Perón, particularly when he came back into power.
Right.
You know, it was a dangerous time, very dangerous time. We know that our democracy is a very fragile thing. And I think something like the Perón regime is a great reminder about how fragile the idea of democracy is, and how, yes, it does change, and we have to go with change, and but we have to be very careful if we want to protect it, because it can very so simply, within a blink of an eye, transform itself into fascism, transform itself into totalitarianism. It's just that easy. People can go that route if we're not careful. That's why we always have to be mindful of it, and every now and then in a show, in a musical of all things, be reminded of that fact as well.
Right. And it's what I liked about listening to it was the show, as you said, it doesn't shy away from the darker moments.
Okay.
At all. And it's because it's reflective of a person's life. And
yes,
it really shows that everyone has darker moments. And as you said, it talks about the abandonment of the father leaving, and it shows the resilience of the women in the family and how they pull together. And it talks about the grandmother and the grandfather and their rather complicated relationship with each other, which is very, I will not go into detail. You can listen to that on the album.
That's very much based on truth. I mean, that was a wacky, but it actually makes a lot of sense too. You know, the reason their marriage survived or their love survived, let me put it that way, was because they never saw each other.
Right.
Or lived together.
Should I miss the man? Should I miss his vices? Should I miss his flaws? His dirty nails and smell of cheap cologne? Should I miss the man? Would he need my tears with all he put me through? What good would crying do? What good for all these years after years after years?
I could miss those moments, too short and too rare. A kiss, kissed in secret, or joke that we'd share. Those one or two moments when I came to see that someone had been put on earth just for me. Those one or two moments that I can't regret. Everything else may be best to forget. If I miss the man, would that make me lonely? Should I miss the man? You mustn't worry, I can be alone. Someday you will learn. The longer that you live, how hard it is to love. And yet, if you know love, how easy to forgive and forgive and forgive. Eat your macaroni. I don't want you starving. I don't ever want you starving.
When you're listening to it, there's a lot of universal themes in this, because there are a lot of relationships that I know, and I'm sure we all know, that survive because they don't see each other.
Exactly.
That's not surprising. It just happens that way. But it also, you do see the resilience of women who become basically single moms because the husband leaves or the father leaves, and you do see that.
And I might add that also too, in that particular era in Argentina, where, you know, and being Catholic too, the disgrace and dishonor that was, burdened with the woman who had gotten divorced was the onus of that was incredibly hard. But she persevered in spite of it all, Graziella's mother, and, you know, worked through it and was both mother and father role in that household. Went out and earned the paycheck, to keep the roof over their heads, you know, did everything she could to make sure that Graziella was, enrolled in ballet class, and did everything she could to, ensure her daughter's happiness and well-being and safety, more importantly. It's a hard role, and women are dealing with that today, even, and still, you know, we don't give them enough credit for it.
So now it's time to talk about the deer.
The deer.
So explain the deer and explain how the deer fit into the show. You don't have to go into too much detail because they're a little bit of a surprise. Although in the cast recording, it's a little hard to tell right away what's happening.
Right.
In the show, it's probably a little more obvious, but there are deer in the show who talk and sing. There's two deer that are brothers. They're played by the same performer in the show.
Tally Sessions.
And they interact with our lead character, Anuncia. And they're there for a reason, because of magical realism, because that's what happens in magical realism. You can have animals suddenly start speaking and talking and conveying
things. Dancing the bolero.
Right. They're there for a purpose. And please explain why you decided to use them, because it is part of the cultural thing.
Well, based on the facts, Grazi has a beautiful home in the country, and I've visited her a couple times, and see her, out in the backyard talking to the deer that wander in, and she has conversations with the deer. She has conversations, and she names each of the chipmunks in her who live around her house. She has the names of chipmunks around the house. So she talks to the wildlife, and you know, it's, and animals, of course, as you well know, if you're a pet owner, even. Mm-hmm. But there's something about the spirit, the ka, if you will, the Egyptian word ka, that they embody some part of our being, and manifest themselves in terms of our subconscious in some ways. And the deer, of course, she has conversations with this one deer that she has all the time, who, you know, knows that she's upset that she has to do this particular deed of burying her aunt's ashes on this particular day. He recognizes her regrets and her struggles with some of the memories that she has. And he says, why bother? Put it behind you, you know, let it go. Don't stress about it. That this is the first year. And, so he gives her comfort in that. So in other words, it's like her back of her mind or subconscious going, you know what, let it go. Then again, his brother comes in later in the show, the brother of that same deer, who's the exact opposite, who represents everything that's rotten about show business and rotten about, you know, the whole bossy end of things, you know, and is a pessimist and a cynic. And so there's also that part of the human mind too, that works too. We can't escape the cynic part of our mind. And so the deer kind of represents that as well. The second deer, at least. And so it was fun to play around with those ideas of subconscious working on the level of having a talking deer. But again, in, you know, magic realism is simply reality. There's no such thing as we call it magic realism here in our country, here in America. And it's really just reality, you know, for our for many of our South American compatriots.
What's to forgive? What's to regret? They're all for naught, those memories you ought to forget. Live while you can. Love while you can. Dance while you can.
My neighbors can see us.
Where? I'm okay with that.
If you feel sad when you've done wrong, cry if you must, but don't despair, just move along. Live all you can, love all you can, dance while you can. Makes you suicidal. Put down the razor, stay off of ledges, tend to your garden, plant some more hedges. Maybe you'll find,
maybe I'll find,
some kind of peace,
some kind of peace.
Letting the past be past brings you lasting relief. Dance while you
Why not?
I forgot. I have a dental appointment.
Weird.
To be honest with you, it isn't any different than the people that we know who talk to their pets and actually feel like their pets, and their pets are talking back to them. We know people who are like that. We know people who communicate with their pets. It's not any different than that.
There were a couple of comments going, why is she talking to a deer? Some of the critics were like, what does that mean?
I mean,
ever talk to an animal?
Of course. To me, it made sense not only on that level, but also in the level of the fact that it is culturally in Latin and South America, it is also part of the literary tradition to have that kind of thing in it. So it made sense to me when I read it. I was like, oh, it makes sense. But I guess for some people, they just could not understand there was a person on stage with antlers who was talking to her.
Yeah.
It made sense to me, but what do I know?
but you can't please all people.
No, you can't. You can't please all. You can't please all the people all the time, as we well know. Anyway, talk about the garden itself, because the garden itself, there was a conscious choice, at least in the Lincoln Center production, to not make it a realistic garden, to make it a little bit more abstract, and not specifically representational of a real garden, which. Obviously, you can't tell that when you're listening to the cast recording, but if you look at photographs from the Mitzi Newhouse production, you can see that it's not a realistic garden, which I actually liked because I don't think it should look like a realistic garden.
God, no. Oh, absolutely
not. It can't, because then it's defeating the purpose of the show. Because the garden is more metaphorical. It's really about nurture, what nurtures you, and her past she's grown into what she is because of everything that's nurtured her throughout her life. And that's what the garden is. So talk about the discussions that went into creating that look.
Again, that comes from the marvelous Mark Wendland. He is a remarkable set designer who, has that wonderful gift that all the real great set designers do that I've had many occasions to work with, sitting with that script for a long period of time and imagining and bringing something to the table that neither Grazia or Ella and I ever imagined it to be, that suddenly makes us want to step up to plate and even do even more creative work with the piece. Now, we didn't expect this design, and it was like, whoa, he went there. And suddenly, the past could come through these beautiful, intricate, geometrically complex lines of floating flowers in the air, if you will. And suddenly, time and memory, which Mark understood by reading the piece, that the piece is about time and memory, and sometimes that gets warped, and he understood the geometry of time, if you will, and was able to translate that into this beautiful, beautiful set, which, again, I have to say, cannot exist without the beautiful, beautiful lighting that was created by Jules Fisher and Peggy Eisenhower. And lighting, of course, without great lighting, you can't have a good musical. Music is lighting is music. The set that can't exist unless it's properly lit, and I think that is part and parcel of the beautiful teamwork that both set designer and lighting designers did on this production, both at the Old Globe, which was on proscenium stage, by the way, at the Old Globe, and then thrust stage at the Mitzi Newhouse, which is a whole different styles of, if you will, presentation of a show. Comedy doesn't always work so well on thrust stage. I've realized.
It's a whole different ball game.
That joke didn't land. Cut that one there. It worked in San Diego. Why? Because it was front and center.
Exactly.
Line, and everybody can see the person. The thrust stage, you're often doing the circular fan thing. The actors have to do a little degree of spinning the fan around the room.
Yes, exactly.
You can sort of see, all the faces and stuff.
You can't, because facial expressions get lost on a thrust and things like that. And it's hard.
And it's all diagonals, as Grazzi's discovered, where, you know, over the years working at the Mitzi, it's, you know, most thrust stages have a series of VOMs that come in at a diagonal. Mm-hmm. And the VOMs that you play to all the time, and you don't ever stand straight and center stage in a thrust stage to deliver your lines. You ease it toward the VOM, if you will, in the diagonal that you need to be in. And but I don't know if diagonals always work for comedies.
it's the sign of a great theater director is one who can work in both,
because being
able to shift from a proscenium to a thrust, or even in the round, completely in the round, is a challenge for any director. And being able to master both, and of course Graziella has been around for so long, she's learned how to master them.
I'm sure.
And I love that. I mean, whose idea? Because in the show, you're still using the framing device of that she's kind of putting off at the beginning, the lifetime achievement ceremony.
Yeah, she has to do something she's put off for 3 months, which is to bury the ashes.
Right,
beloved Tia, and if you've ever had to do that, you know. And you're putting it off because that's your, and the reason she's putting it off, and this is true with Grazi's own life, was Grazi waited quite a long time because once she did that act of burial of her Tia, that was it. She has no children, you understand. And that's the last connection she has to that family, those women. Mm-hmm. So this act was a very traumatic event for Graziella, the burial of her aunt, and of course she wanted to do it in the garden because the aunt, her garden, because her Tia loved the garden. She had a favorite spot whenever she visited Graziella, and so this particular day has a lot of emphasis. When we went out to San Diego to do the show, we were delayed for a year and a half because of COVID, unfortunately. In fact, we were all going to get on the plane board until they shut down the country to go out to the Old Globe and premiere the piece. In the interim, about a year and a half, I had time to think about the piece a little bit more. And I said, I want to add one more, something much more, one more outside world pressing on her. Not just the intimate act of burying her beloved Tia, but something else pressing on her, which, you know, is something that she doesn't want to do. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to have to go back to the city, New York City, and collect a Lifetime Achievement Award. So the second day we're out in the Oak Globe getting ready to go into production for this, Grazi gets the call, and she gets a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Tonys, and honoring her, finally she gets a Tony.
For
living so long. And it was like, wow. And I said, you know, I'm going to write in that you've won $50 million in the lottery, Grazia.
right. You made that happen. Unbeknownst to you, you made it happen.
I wish I could. Oh, my God.
There were, believe me, cheers all over when that was announced. What I noticed about the show is, I think one of the things I really liked about it is I think that the show is absolutely perfect for regional productions.
Oh, very nice. Thank you. Yes, I hope so.
I think so, just because of the cast. It's a small, relatively small cast, heavily female. As we know from regional theaters, it's always good when you've got a very female cast and you've got two men and a lot, mostly women, and a relatively simple set that's open to a lot of interpretation, mm-hmm. which is nice.
Yeah.
To me, one of the things that I think is what I really like about the fact that it could have a long regional life is the fact that even though it is not specifically a biographical musical about Graziella Daniel, no matter what theater does it, they're going to end up having some sort of note in the program talking about the history of the show and that it was quote unquote inspired by the life of Graziella Daniel, which is going to pique people's interest in finding out more about her. And to me, that's what's going to be nice, because that will outlive her and that will be sort of a continuing legacy of her, in the sense that even though it's not a biographical musical about her, it will always be attached to her and people will always be curious about who she was.
I hope so. But even more to the point about the three women who, mm-hmm. you know, raised her and brought her up and gave her that support and that determination to make it in a world that is not always very supportive and adversarial toward women, and particularly in America, where there's, you know, the issue of being Latino and trying to forge a career in this business. Even today, it's difficult. And so I hope that that is what's also the legacy of the piece, to make sure that their legacy is remembered. And all of our, all those people that, whether you're male, female, whatever, you know, that you remember those people that were your teachers and your supporters and your, you know, those who said, yes, you can do what you want to do.
Right.
And that to me is the hopefully what will resonate if the piece gets done again and with other companies, whatever.
And I think that is going to end up ultimately being the motivating force as to why it does get produced, is because it does have a really strong message. And it has a very strong message for women and girls, because of the support of the female side of the family, of women pulling together and supporting and nurturing a young girl.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important. And I think that that's a really good message about the show. And it's also a really great message about families. And
yes,
and whoever the family is, it doesn't even have to be, it doesn't have to even have to be, blood relatives. It's just it's the family structure.
Exactly. And that's another point of the piece too, is that, okay, this is not your normal family. I mean, these are, mm-hmm. there's father figure, the mother's divorced, there's, the grandmother has her situation. And just to show that a family can be created if you will it to be, and you are on the same page about what the goal is mm-hmm. of the family, one, to stay alive and to help each other in times of trouble.
Right. It's all just about caring and loving.
Exactly right.
That's all it is.
And saying thank you, Donald.
Yeah.
I mean, if we all just, instead of going at each other's throats so often as we do, if we just said to somebody, that we may have a disagreement with, thank you mm-hmm. for your opinion. Thank you for your, point of view, as opposed to, I'm going to kill you for your point of view. Just say thank you for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And move on, gratitude is missing. And the piece is an act of gratitude from me personally to Graziella for the years that she has given me such joy and pleasure working with her. It is a gift of, that what she's given me. And this is my way of saying thank you to her as well, by saying thank you to the people who raised her. And then in my own way too, of saying thank you to the people that helped me and supported me in my life.
Well, I am going to thank you for being here, because it's been a joy chatting with you. I was thrilled.
Thank you.
I was thrilled when the publicist reached out and said, "Would you like to interview Michael John Lacusa about this new album?" And I know you've got another chat coming up with somebody else, because you have something else coming up, which is rather interesting. If you want to give us a little teaser about it.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. I'm doing a new show called American Eclipse. American Eclipse, and it's about the eclipse of 1878. And we're going down to Texas to watch the eclipse down there. And in conjunction with Baylor University down there, we're going to do a concert of about 10 songs. And the director, Bill Rausch, and I are going to go down there, and with the man who wrote the book that it's based on, and American Eclipse, David Baron. And we're all going to do a concert and talk back with an audience with a whole bunch of wonderful folks from New York, our Mary Testa and Tally Sessions and Mark Kudish and Rachel Bay Jones and Kenita Miller and Stanley Harcourt. We're all going to go down there and play around there at the university and sing some songs from the show, which is really exciting. And then the most extraordinary thing, to witness the eclipse ourselves. And see if I musicalized it correctly.
That sounds very interesting. And are you workshopping it, or do you have a production?
Yeah, that'll be coming up this coming. Hopefully this coming fall we'll plan on that. Everything has to be, this with COVID still out there and the world it is, we take one step at a time, but we're aiming for the fall if we can to do our workshop, get that up on its feet. We've had a reading of it, two readings of it. And so I think it's time to get on its feet now and start playing around with it and staging.
Right. And it's nice. It's nice that you're keeping Mary Testa employed.
Oh, yes. I have another show for her. I'm doing a piece called Jolie Gabor, Her Fabulous Three Daughters, and Always His Life.
Oh, my God.
The mother of Zsa Zsa Gabor, Ava Gabor,
and Magda. Gabor. Yeah.
And of course, Mary is Jolie Gabor. Oh, my God. Donald.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. That woman. Oh, my God.
Mary Testa is a national treasure. She just is.
She is indeed.
She is. Well, again, Michael John, thank you so much. It was a treat talking with you.
Happy spring.
You too. Thank you so, so much.
Life is just one friggin' prickly pear, lady.
But it doesn't have to be. Your brother told me life can be so easy and beautiful if you make it easy and beautiful.
He didn't have it as bad as I did. He had talent, a good home, decent proper education. Me? I won't bore you with the details of my sorry life.
I understand, and it is getting late.
When I was two. My father left Ma for another doe. Yeah, I know, tough nuggets. But I never saw him again, and it hurt. It hurt bad. And then you human types. You built your lousy mall, smack on top of what had been our home. No one warned us, and now there is a Chuck E. Cheese where I used to sleep. That left Ma and me homeless, barely scraping by. She had to work the stag party circuit just to keep me fed. I offered to sell myself to a petting zoo, but she wouldn't have that. Bless her heart. Then she caught a bad case of the Lyme disease, and that was that. On the day she died, I didn't cry. No, I did not. I used up all my tears. By the time I was three, I was in rough shape, running with a bad herd from Jersey. And I was in some deep trouble, breaking into homes, destroying property, chasing after every piece of tail in the forest, trying to fill a void that could never be filled. Thought of cutting out of here. Get a fresh start, a new life in L.A. Get to the movies. Live animation work. Why not? But a near-fatal encounter with an electric fence outside of Scranton put an end to that. That sobered me up. But by then, I realized the futility of my existence. So no one is going to sell me on the meaning of life, lady. Because I have learned the sad, sorry truth. Life is only smoke and mirrors. Tell me that there's some cosmic reason when every single day is friggin' hunting season. Oh, what a prickly, prickly, prickly Paris life.
What's to forgive? What's to regret? They're all for naught, those memories you ought to forget. Live as you will, wildlife or man. Love who you want and dance, dance, dance while you can.
Why not?
You're not my type of deer.
Weird.